in this final phase of Kali Yuga, where the events are becoming ever more accelerated toward their final culmination, it feels important to continue to meet and meditate together and to clarify any remaining doubts or eliminate any obstacles that still might keep you from the total realization of truth and the freedom from the bondage of illusion. So, for that reason, I felt it more important to come to teach than to continue with the past retreat. In terms of current events, to start with the samsaric plane, the international tension is continuing to increase. The Ukrainian army, with all of its Western weapons, is being obliterated and destroyed in its probably last possibility of mounting a ground war offensive. And the Western weapons indeed have proven inferior and incapable of breaking through or even getting close to the Russian front lines without being destroyed in minefields, which leads to a greater desperation, of course, on the part of the West. Now, it's also true, and we should keep in mind, that although the weapons that have been shown are inferior, there may well indeed be secret weapons that are not, that are sourced from non-terrestrial sources. So we may be in for some surprises on that score. But nonetheless, the conflict is, as the Russians openly call it, existential, meaning a matter of life and death. And both sides feel that way. Neither side can lose and in fact, have to win. Win at a time when, because of technology, winning is really impossible. And so this is the situation that most sane analysts cannot imagine could lead to nuclear war, because who would be insane enough to do that? And it's interesting that most of the military analysts don't connect the dots that the political and the social analysts connect. That we are in the midst of a depopulation program that started before this war. And so there is not really an effort to win in the usual sense of that word, but to depopulate the earth, which they can be very successful at, if that is actually what winning is constituted by the forces who are really behind all of this. Nonetheless, it unfolds in perfection, and it's in that light of the perfection of the process of the unfoldment of the will of God that yogis must perceive this through. It's the only lens and the only frame of reference that would be valid, which can only be perceived from the nirvanic state of consciousness. However, there are also clues within the news of interesting events that may seem to be frivolous but tend to be actually insights into the nature of reality. For example, all of the ancient texts that deal accurately with Satyuga, the first yuga, the golden age, They declare that human reproduction was by immaculate conception, that was the way that it unfolded in that first period of time, that very long period of time, actually. And then gradually that capacity became relatively lost, with a few famous exceptions that we know about. But it now seems to be returning. And so the good news is, this week, the first officially recognized Immaculate Conception in the world happened this week in Costa Rica. And it was an immaculately conceived baby crocodile, a virgin birth. And it's in the newspapers. I hope that you look it up, because it's very interesting. And this female crocodile was kept alone for years, no male company. And I guess she got tired of waiting and found a way to do it yourself, and she did. And voila, we have a virgin crocodile avatar. So I think it's God's sense of humor that the first virgin birth would be a crocodile in Kali Yuga. But I think it's the beginning of virgin births appearing in other species, including our own. So take that for what you believe it's worth, but I think it's one of those strange synchronicities that Shiva likes to pepper the phenomenal plane with, just to boggle our minds a little bit. So I think it's important to understand the acts of God as constituting a coordinated manifestation of a miraculous world in which such things as virgin births take place, as well as every other kind of manifestation that seems to be without cause, that's simply produced by the mind itself, and a mind that is resonating in God consciousness, because God consciousness is the creative intelligence that manifests. And so the manifestation, however, then has to unfold and be sustained. And it is sustained through time, but there is also an entropic process, so that gradually we come to a point where the world gets old and needs to die, like every being within the world. And the world then returns in rapture. And this is a very important point. It's a rapturous return back to God and back to the initial state of the singularity prior to creation, that will then give virgin birth to a new world. And so we are in the time of the rapture now, for those who are willing to return. And what is the return? It's the disidentification from the character that you are playing. It's that simple. The truth is, and has always been clear to sages from the beginning in every tradition, that there is one intelligence, one infinite, vast intelligence, who creates the cosmos and all of the beings within the universe who appear and disappear. It's a fractal dream field. And so the mind of God produces the universe, and the universe becomes filled with beings, and each of those beings at a microcosmic level has the same creative capacities. So that humans can manifest their own creativity. But the level of that creativity has gone down as we have lost our sense of being pure spirit, and then lost below that, we became under the influence of the belief that we are souls, and then we began to identify just as matter. And then the final ideological fall in the end of Kali Yuga, most of the human beings became atheists and materialists and body identified, even if they are believers in religious constructs, but body identified and identified with a particular character, which is one tiny fragment of our infinite consciousness. And so we have lost the fullness of our power of creation. And the only way to get that back is to disidentify from the part object that is the ego mind and realize our true nature as the whole. But so long as one is identified only with a part, then one will be ruled by fear. And one will be ruled by that samsaric state of mind in which you think your security comes from clinging to other people, to pets, to money, to comfort zones of various kinds, biological families, and even armies, and ideological groupings, and that sort of thing. Whereas the only real security is the return to the rapturous realization of our deathless self. And the deathless self is the one self. It's not the soul level. You see, we have to go through three deaths, and especially now, because during the earlier part of Kali Yuga and the previous yugas, we would only go through two at best. But the body will die without whether you want it to or not. It has a limited shelf life. But very often, the ego does not die before the body dies. And then the ego has to go through the meat grinder of a bardo state to get its sanskaras separated out from its imaginary form and attachment to the name and to the situation that it was in while alive, so it won't be a poltergeist or have some other earthbound time in a hell realm. So it has to go through that because there has to be death of the ego. So yogis want to go through the death of the ego before the death of the body. So then there is no need to go through a bardo deviation and therefore a rebirth, because the sanskaras will still need to be finally fulfilled or dissolved by conscious renunciation and surrender to God. And then we have to go through the third death, which is the death of the soul. The soul itself has to be done with its journey through time in order to express its creative functions to the full, and must at a certain point be ready, willing, and fully able, and yearning to dissolve back into the source of the soul's being. And this is that moment when all souls will be drawn back, but those who voluntarily do this retain a continuity of consciousness that will enable the serving of the soul in the angelic realm. And it's by serving as angels that the highest kind of good karma is attained, that then produces a very high level of participation in the following cycle or graduation from the cycle. So this is the time when we are determining our destiny, And it requires going through these three deaths and doing it with grace, not with fear and not with trepidation, not with any sense of identification with what is dying, but only with what is deathless. And what is deathless is pure awareness. And in order to go through ego death, we must stay in that state of pure awareness, pure presence. Presence that is not identified with the thoughts of the ego. And even if one doesn't yet have the power to stop those thoughts because of one's total absorption in God via one's love of God, one's adoration, one's yearning for union, which will end the thought processing, except for those thoughts that are given by God to be transmitted into the dream field. Even before then, if one disidentifies from the thoughts and from the character as the thinker of those thoughts, then one is no longer disturbed by the character's habits, idiosyncrasies, attitudes, attachments, whatever. And it by not being disturbed by it or interested and invested in it, they will gradually weaken. And because you're not breathing life into them, you're not ratifying them, the character will gradually receive the shakti that enables a complete transformation of the character to reflect the state of pure presence, which is God consciousness, that will then turn the vehicle into a servant of God, into a reflection that is able to function flawlessly, impeccably, as an instrument of love and of wisdom and of contentment. So the more we disidentify from all attitudes, from all emotional reactions, from all behavior patterns, from all of the ego's drives and its conflicts and its suffering of the agony of not being adored and not having the power at once and not having all of the other things and connections that it believes will bring it peace of mind or some kind of safety and security. Because those needs can not be met on the phenomenal plane. The only way to be free of the suffering is through that disinvestment and realization that you are not and never were that character. You are the intelligence that created that character as one of many in the play. The play is from the mind of God. The play has much more reality than any character in it, but the play itself is simply a reflection of the wisdom of God that becomes manifest through the unfoldment of karma that brings one gradually to a state of maturation and acceptance in which, through not fighting against the reabsorption in God, the wisdom and the clarity that all of this is already perfect comes to one. And it's the moment that that insight into the perfection of all that is, the moment that happens, one is totally disinterested in the unfoldment of one's character, one's ego form in the this theodrama. It will no longer matter to one. It's not a question of, oh, I have to transform the ego, I have to make it more virtuous, I have to... No. That's everything happens only through the will of God, not through the will of the soul, or and certainly not through the illusion of free will of the ego. Nothing can happen through the intermediary vehicles. Whatever does happen is ordained by the one intelligence, whether your character knows it or not. It's not being done by the character. And as soon as you know you are not the character, then it becomes irrelevant how the character actually behaves and lives. Not irrelevant in a nihilistic sense, but irrelevant in the sense that it's all being taken care of by God. And that total trust and that total realization that you are only presence, not an agent who is here to make things better, but you are an agent of the one who alone can make things better and whose function now is to terminate a process that has already become too degraded and perverted to be allowed to continue, so that suffering will end through the will of that perfect being whom you are. And the more that you are clear that that is who you are, not the character, nor the soul who dreamed that particular character, but the dreamer of the entire dream. Once you realize that each of us can only be a manifestation of that one self because that one self is the only real self, the only real self. And if you are in that resonance, you are indeed one with that being and deathless and timeless and fearless and in the blissful adoration of your creation. And the creation and the creator are one. And it's in this state of non-duality where the perfection is recognized, nothing needs to be done, nothing needs to be changed. Nothing needs to be improved. It's that recognition of perfection that allows the final letting go and the total trust in the one self who is doing everything, the only one who actually does anything. And the more one resonates with that oneself and with love, the more one's character reflects that self's will. So everything is very simple, and as I have said repeatedly, the problem is it's too simple for the ego. And the ego wants to see things as difficult and conflictive and hard to figure out, and one's mind wants to create counter efforts to say this is impossible. I can't stop being my character. I can't stop being at the effect of its fears and its illusions. But the moment that you recognize that you are the awareness of the character and that presence is not the character, and there is a letting go, you access the infinite intelligence and peace and joy of the real self. And that is how liberation is regained, and it comes with the rapturous sense of ultimate freedom. And this is what can happen at any moment. And the more yogis who attain this realization now, the more that the morphogenic field of the whole planet will feel that coherent energy and will enable others to pick it up more easily. And all of those who are searching for God and for liberation or the Buddha nature or the Tao or whatever term they give to that absolute self, absolute goodness, absolute salvation that they seek, they will be able to attain it because the connection and the vibrational frequency will be easier to attune to. And so the more of us who are transmitting that energy, that's the service that is the good karma that makes up for all the bad karma that we may have done in the past. And it settles our accounts with the samsaric field. So it's that state of total giving of the love of God, which is the energy that will enable others to become free, is the generous offering that frees us from the contracted state of the ego and enables us to peacefully and joyously take our place in the infinite sky of mind. The tantric Buddhists of Tibet, they call it the Tigle. But what it means is it's the dancing light that one perceives this phenomenal field to be. You don't see forms and material objects of any kind. It's all dancing light, a sky of light. And the Sanskrit is dhaka, and one who is dancing in that light is a dakini, a sky dancer. But it's the light itself that's dancing, and it's dancing for the awareness. And the awareness and the light boogie together and create that ultimate blissful consummation. And it's this then that brings the light into its purest form as singularity, and then a new virgin birth of a world is born. So we are in that most auspicious moment where all of this is now taking place in the grassroots around the world, and many of those yogis will be unsung heroes of this transformation, completely unknown and without any interest in being known, but whose secret work of emanating the bliss of union with God, of the realization of non-duality, will be those heroes whose functions of sustaining the world in Satyuga and all the other yugas will be earned until graduation is fully decided on by the will of the ordainer. So this is the story of yoga. This is the traditional understanding. And at the esoteric levels, it's shared in East and West by all the sages. And it's something that every yogi recapitulates, realizes independently without having to believe any of this, just by doing the experiment of entering and abiding in pure presence and not going back into the ego mind and refusing to identify with its I thoughts or any of its fragmented urges. And by observing without being captured by it, one becomes aware of the freedom, the free state that is our birthright, and we accept our freedom from the character. And it will go on to do what it is meant to do, but our attention and our focus and the locus of our being will be with God, not any longer in the samsaric state of mind, but in the nirvanic mind. And then, of course, as we said, that duality disappears. It's just God. It's just the self. There is nothing else. And that is what is real. So I hope this is useful to you. And I think it's always good to get reminders of it until we are stabilized in the realization of our true nature. But what is important is that we create the habit of remembrance of our true self as pure awareness and not identify with thoughts. It's giving up that addiction to thinking with all of the emotions that go with that and all of the volatility and all of the suffering that comes as a result of that. It's by renouncing that suffering, by renouncing the character who suffers, that freedom is regained. What's important to note is, although we say the freedom is regained, because in a practical sense, yes, that's true, but in a even more true sense, we have never lost that freedom. We just became ignorant of it because our attention went elsewhere. It went into the realm of experience. The soul chose the intensity of experience as a physical being, which included the thrill of war, of conflict, of chivalry, of proving your manhood, or of giving birth and of living a life filled with sensuous love and connectivity and all of the kinds of experiences that people are so captured by. We chose that in Kali Yuga rather than a different kind of intensity of God consciousness. And so it is a shifting of and a cultivation of the taste for an entirely different quantum leap into a dimension of intensity that the ego cannot even imagine, that will get us out of the addiction to the intensity of the experiential samsaric realm and our longing for the continuation of such intensity of experience. And eventually one says, I've had enough, no more intensity, thank you. I'd like to get out of here now and not suffer anymore. At any moment that you're wise enough to make that choice, you can realize you were always free. You don't have to fight. There's no struggle. If you believe you're the character, you're going to have to struggle. And you're going to have to take a long time to meditate and do all of these things. Meditation is not necessary. There's no need to do it because it is a doing. It's a character trying to achieve an object. But the whole point is there is no character and no object. And that subject-object duality is what must be let go of. So the character, there's nothing the character can do that will either advance your chances of liberation or hold it back. Both the efforts and the counter-efforts are futile. But because you're already free, at any moment, you can realize that. And then you will meditate the character to be peaceful without it having to do anything. It will simply reflect the peace that has been achieved by realizing your eternal divine nature. The character can't realize it. The character may receive it as a lightning bolt that you send to it once you have achieved God consciousness, but the character itself is an empty suit. It has no will and no essence. This is what the Buddhists talk about when they talk about the anatta doctrine. There's no self, there's no essence, there's no real intrinsic being in any of the characters. But there is one intrinsic Buddha nature that is animating all the characters. That's who you are. And from that level, then, the character will function in a totally different way. So don't try to do this from the ground up. Start at the top, and then it's very easy, it's instant. If you try to make this some melodramatic effort of the ego to conquer its own habit patterns, it can't do it, because the one trying to do it is part of the construct that is stuck in whatever fixed form of collapsed qualium wave functions that brought it into its current state. And it will require a decollapsing of those waves from a much higher, more coherent level of consciousness that's not identified with the mental or the physical vehicle. And once that's achieved, then there's freedom. It no longer will matter what the character does. And the character can go anywhere. You can go into a war zone, no problem, because you have gone beyond the death of the ego that creates the fear of the death of the body. It matters not once you're in the infinite consciousness. But until you're in that infinite consciousness, it will matter to you a lot. And one should be prudent enough, hopefully as a character, to at least create the conditions in which you can make this decision very decisively, very, very one-pointedly. But it can be done under almost any conditions. And that's why, you know, even on the deathbed, why do religions offer the last rites? Because even at that moment, you can go through ego death and then change your destiny and go to God rather than into some bardo state or other intermediate purgatory or hell realm. So it is important to know that you are free now. And that knowledge, if you use it, you can make the application of it effective at any moment you choose. So I hope you will take that good news, not at the level of the character, but at the level of the soul awakening to your nature as the negation of the character. The soul begins to awaken by realizing it is not the character. That's the famous neti neti. No, I'm not the body, I'm not the mind, I'm not the emotions, etc. But what am I? The soul doesn't know that. All it knows is the negation. It knows the emptiness. Go into the emptiness. Don't be afraid of not knowing who you are, because at least you know who you are not. And when you go into the not knowing, but with the adoration of whatever power has created your conscious ability to know that you are not, then you will be filled with the fullness of that supreme presence. The emptiness and the fullness will become one, but first the emptiness, and that requires humility. The humility of not knowing, of realizing you're in the cloud of unknowing, to use a famous Christian mystical text's title, that not knowing, but the full presence to the wondering of what am I, not in words any longer, but in observing, in being present to presence, will will create an awareness of the dancing energy, of the tigle, of that dakka, and then one will be filled with the light that will turn one into a dakini or into an angel, and then into the final union. So this is our basic journey. Everyone will have their own, every character will have its own itinerary of how and when it awakens to this, and what suffering it has to go through, and what kinds of learnings through trial and error, etc., that the character has to endure. But technically, you have the freedom at any moment to drop the character and realize the self and not suffer any longer. But if you like the melodrama you're in, then okay, that will continue. And the character can't get out of itself. It requires the ordaining of that by the intelligence of the oneself. So going through the emptiness of not being the character and adoring the one who has the power to make that decision until that is recognized as the self is the passage into the power of freedom. So may you all take that rite of passage and complete it so that the new world can be born from all of our immaculate efforts. So, floor is open if anyone has any comments or questions. And if there are any on the Zoomers' behalf, please read them. There's a, do you have a mic?
Thank you for your encouragement. You said to start from the top. Mm-hmm. Well, here is the whole space, the nature, everything here is helping me to come back to not knowing and drop the blah, 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 blah.
Good.
However, in the madness in real life out there, I find it very difficult, and I feel like there is so much energy now of fear. It's just like everywhere. And so when you go in the field, that is, I can't avoid it, you know, because it's, so how, when you're like in the midst of this thickness of suffering, to start from the top?
Well, you just said here it's easy, yeah? Well, if you do it here, it will stay with you wherever the body goes. It will then no longer matter. You will no longer be disturbed because you won't be in samsara anymore. And none of the conditions of that illusory world will bother you. You will be free already. So free yourself now while you're here from the character, because you know you're not the character. You are the awareness of the character. You're even aware that what was just spoken by the character is not you. And you are beyond any doubts or any questions. You're just simply pure awareness. You're at peace, you're already free. Stay in that state. And don't identify with thoughts until you are so totally established in that state that only the mind of God pertains to you, no longer the mind of character. And then whatever thoughts come will be brilliant, infinite thoughts that will be freeing for all of the characters. And you will no longer be being the character, but an avatar of the absolute self. That's who you really are, even at this moment.
Can I ask you one more question?
No, there will be no questions at that
I
point.
Know you say that to all questions from ego is one the same answer. You know,
that's correct.
I lost my train of thoughts. So because I'm going back to that chaos, and you say we don't need meditation, we don't even need to do, just come back to the top and everything will happen. And I just know that for me silence is the key. Yeah. And when I'm in my own silence, sometimes I can't even communicate with people around me. They look at me like I look like I'm different.
So?
Then they get nervous.
These are, again, this is the character disturbing you. You are in silence all the time. The real self is always in silence. That's your nature, is silence. The talking one is the character. Once you realize you're not the character, it doesn't matter where the character goes in space and time, because you remain in the timeless, deathless dimension. You're no longer identified. It's really important. You, right now, the character is speaking, and the character can't get this. It will never grok what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's just like
now.
Say, okay, what if? What would I do then? If what I do, if you know?
Yeah, that's the character's thoughts. Abandon those thoughts. The character cannot figure it out. And even if you go back there and you meditate 20 hours a day, you won't be in peace, because the character cannot be. It will not succeed through the path of meditation from that level. Only the realization of the self, who is the silence, will silence the character. So really, take it seriously when I say start from the top, because the top is the one self. There's only one real self, not a bunch of them. Your character is not a real self. It's an illusion. When you know you are the one self, you are free. And until then, everything else is part of the illusion. No matter what you do, you can take every drug and plant medicine, you can meditate all that you want, you can visit every guru in the world, nothing is going to help. Nothing. Only realizing who you are and then dropping the character. And it's instantaneous, and it doesn't require anyone's help or any substances. It's just purely the realization of what you are.
Okay, I'll try. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this satsang teaching. Very encouraging, as Natasha just said. I have a question about what you said at the end of the teaching about create conditions where you can, and then I don't remember exactly how you put it, realize, or isn't that doing, and who is creating the conditions? Is it a soul?
Well,
or
as it was just said, the ashram has very nice conditions, so you're here in a place where it's easy. So use these conditions. If you're not here, try to create an altar in a place that's peaceful, wherever you are, or visit a temple or a church or a cathedral, whatever, where the space has that sacred quality, that will make it easier. But again, it's not what the character does. The real condition is the subtle condition of adoration of God. That is the condition that will bring the unconditioned self into your space of mind. Okay.
Thank you.
Namaste. Thank you for this really beautiful teaching. I was really struck by it tonight. I really loved what caught me was what you said, creating the habit of remembering the true self. And it was that I wrote down a cultivation, a complete willingness, a devotion, like a consistent practice. And that, it was the creating the habit, and then it immediately was, okay, what is it that I have to do to create the habit, or the attention, or the tapping into that yearning. It just really hit home for me tonight, so thank you. So the thought process in my mind is, when one creates the habit of remembering the true self and there's a willingness and a devotion to that, and that shows up, let's say, through adoration, and then in remembering the true self or in the silence, then something comes up that kind of blocks that reabsorption into God, or the fear comes up. And so does one go into that, or does one stay?
No, like, you witness it and you recognize it's an illusion. This is the character trying to pull you back into identification, because the character is programmed not to die. The ego wants to keep itself going. This is its homeostatic programming, right? And so the ego will do whatever it needs to do to not let you go and make the awareness stay identified with the thoughts and the emotions. But as soon as you realize that all you are is the presence to this, and it's not who you are, you will let it go. And then its fears and all of those things will actually drop away when it can't capture you anymore. It loses the power even to use those tricks, because it's borrowing your intelligence to do this, right? You're empowering an enemy who is impersonating you because you believe it is you. And the moment you realize it isn't you, then all of that power leaves the ego, and it goes it back into the soul. And the more the soul is yearning for God, the more then the energy returns to the total absolute source. So everything is will return to its origin. And the more you realize you are that origin, you are the source. You're not just the soul doing this. You are the absolute. You're the God self. And then the character will manifest as a god or goddess, and that divine nature will be transmitted to the character. But the character can't try to fabricate its divine nature. Then it's an imaginary kind of thing. It has to come from the top down, that it's ordained by the will of the one self. But you are that one self. But your character is not. So it's the purification of that power of awareness that frees you to be fully empowered and to then empower the character to fulfill its potentiality of an avataric divine existence, even within the samsaric plane, in order to give visions and to raise the vibrational frequency that frees others. That's the bodhisattva, right, that the Buddhists call. So that shift in the function of the character within the drama will happen once your consciousness has been promoted to the level that has the authority to do that.
It's interesting because what I'm picking up on is this resonating with love that you spoke about. And when I think about that, there's almost like an immediate forgiveness for everything that's happened. Mm-hmm. And then you were talking about it, I think, in the previous satsang, was letting go, dropping all the files.
Yes.
And in my mind was like, what do you mean I can let go and totally forgive everything my mother did? Like,
why not?
It's that easy? Like, that was the question. And it was, the follow-up was, it can't be that easy. There needs to be some kind of justification, or I have to prove my point. Or it was in the realization, like, of the simplicity of it and the unwillingness of the character to accept that.
Yeah, and your attachment to that, her character in the melodrama, and wanting to fight it out and get her to beg for forgiveness and for you to be adored, right? The character has its own desire for how the drama should work out, but it will never end your attachment to this suffering, petty character who isn't you, and in the fullness of your true divine nature will be lost by being focused on such a tiny part of your being.
So when that comes up in meditation, like this feeling triggered or emotions comes up, then to not believe that, to say this isn't real, and to focus on the self, or to tune into the silence.
But the pure awareness knows. It doesn't have to argue with the ego. It's not about thinking it. It's a silent realization that will come as soon as you are in the state of presence and you're watching the mind's thoughts and you realize, oh, this is ridiculous, right? It's not ridiculous that it's so easy. It's the mind's ridiculousness trying to convince you it isn't easy. And once you know your true nature is that infinite self, no, you won't fall for it, and then you will be free. And you'll realize that you were pretending to be a victim. Right? You are not a victim. You chose that mother. And you were probably her mother in another life, and you needed to suffer what you forced her to suffer in the other one. So once you're in that higher state and you see the whole thing, then your position is garbage, and you can't go on with your lawsuit any longer.
I surrender.
Okay, Thank you. That's good. Please surrender to God and you'll be free.
Thank you, Shunya. So my question is around sitting in the awareness, and as the ego decides to chatter, you know, observing the chatter. But there seems to be some negredo that I have to clear out around my birth that has to do with my not being willing to trust God completely. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that because the light can't get to the first chakra, can't get there, because mm-hmm. it's because of this lack of trust.
Right. But it's the character's lack of trust.
Yes.
It's not God's lack of trust.
No.
And you are God, not the character.
Okay.
And it's the moment you realize you're not the character, and even if you just get to the level, well, I'm the soul of the character, but I'm not the character, and I chose that particular birth trauma and that situation as a test of my faithfulness to God from the soul level, then you will say, I trust you anyway. I know you are perfect and all good, and this was given to me to actually enable me to graduate from this plane of illusion. Then you'll go into gratitude and adoration, and the light will go all the way through like a lightning bolt, and you will be liberated.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This was very valuable. Once again, I have a question and a comment. On this point of the needlessness of meditation, which I recognize what you said is when, I guess, the character sits down and meditate, almost immediately with it there comes this striving or an effort,
yeah.
Because it's like, I'm going to sit down and meditate. Why do I meditate? To reach something.
Mm-hmm.
So I notice that. On the other hand, what I also notice in meditation is that sometimes there's more concentration to stay in presence and to disidentify, which leads to more adoration, and then there's a sense of an inner burning or purification that happens that is stronger when sitting and not doing anything versus doing something physically more active. So it's pretty much, that's the question is...
Yeah, that's the way it is now for you. It doesn't mean that is the way it has to be. There are karma yogis who would say they are most in touch with God when they are active, and they don't get there when they're sitting. So everyone has a different feeling, and some get there through praying, and others get there only through trying to silence the mind, and others think they will get there best through repeating a mantra, or right? There's the thousands of techniques that the characters will use. But none of them will actually work, because as long as you believe you're the character doing something, that's the problem. That's the illusion that has to be overcome. You are not a doer. You're not an agent. You're just pure presence. You're watching the character. The moment you don't identify with that character and you realize who you are beyond the need to meditate. You meditate in order to reach that point. But you can't reach it by meditating. You have to know you're at that point, and then your meditation will be successful. Because you're connecting the current then from both polarities. But if you try to take one polarity and reach non-duality, you just keep pushing the other further ahead of you, like the carrot in front of the horse, right? You never reach it. So it has to be done through recognizing you are already the non-duality of the real. And once you're in that state, then you realize all of this is light. And it's a single intelligence manifesting all of these different melodramas and all of these unfolding patterns and mythologies, etc., that the world is made of. But you are the intelligence behind it all. You're not just a character, you know, playing within it. And because it's just a play of light, there's really no difference between good and evil, right and wrong, something you desire and something you hate. All of this is just part of the play itself. There's no reality except to the light and the awareness of the light with the intelligence to turn it into a beautiful play, a mystery play, and a miracle play, and a play in which we end in the rapturous realization that all along it was God playing with its own nature and turning the oneness into the multiplicity. But it was nothing else ever other than the one. And we are all that. And everyone can take a bow at the end, you know, as a manifestation of God in total equality and without any differences between us, because we are all manifesting the same love, the same mind, the same joy, the same beauty. We are that. And as we drop all the boundaries in which we try to be special and different and all of that, then that realization of the oneness becomes so rapturous that you wouldn't want to go back into that particular character's, you know, little machinations and plots to achieve something. You would much rather already be in the state of salvation. So why not save yourself and save yourself a lot of trouble by doing it now? Because it's the only margin of free will that the character has, is its ability to choose to be aware that it's not the character. And then the free will at the soul level gives us a higher level of freedom to return all the way into God consciousness, because the soul realizes its light is coming from an even higher level of its own being. And so we have to go through these different graduated levels of consciousness in order to realize the oneness, but we can also leapfrog them all and realize the oneness was all there ever was, and that's what you are, and not have to make this some long, difficult journey. You know, it's instant, it's easy, and it's your right to have immediate liberation without any further struggle, if you want that. That's the freedom that we are given. But to actualize that freedom, then there has to be the disconnection from the ego and the connection of our love for God, for the one self. And then the whole pillar of light is activated from the absolute through the cosmos into the depths of the individual character. And at all the fractal levels of all the characters in the dream, because we are dreaming it, but every being is a consciousness. If you went into the life of a honeybee, you would see that its life and its consciousness is even much, probably more fascinating than your own life is, you know, or that of a leaf cutter ant. I mean, they have incredibly fascinating lives. And at every fractal level, there's a consciousness that's enjoying its life. You go into every cell, you got 37 trillion cells or something in your body. Each one of them has its own fascinating life, not to mention the organs that are all kind of coordinating with each other and you know, all of that. It's a dance of living interrelationships. But within each cell, you go, if you have a microscope, you'll see that the organelles within the cell are having an interesting life, you know, producing DNA and RNA and all of these things and getting rid of toxins and throwing the ball to this other protein molecule. And I mean, they're having fun, you know. So, you know, we are probably the dumbest of all of the types of characters that we could be. Humans aren't aware of any of this, you know. But we are all of it. So why not enjoy being the whole and not just a little piece? That's my piece. Okay, anyone else before we adjourn?
Thank you, Shunya. Can you hear me? Okay. Well, I wanted to thank you for the reminder. It seems you can't hear enough to quit identifying with the ego character, disinvest in it, and accept that its needs will not get met in this realm. So to turn to Shiva, I really liked your explanation of the dancing light. It brought to mind, I once got to see the dancing light, like up in Alaska. I think they called it the Aurora Borealis, I think. And I was thinking about that, and it reminded me also, it sounds very similar to the Ouroboros. And is that related in any way? Or
no.
Not really? Okay, or to your concept. Okay.
I mean, everything is related, but no, the Ouroboros is really more about, you know, it's the snake eating its own tail, right? But it's ultimately consciousness eating up all of its intermediary characters and returning to the singularity, and then growing a new tail and a new world. But it is the connection of the beginning with the end, the Alpha and the Omega, and the moment you make that connection, which you can do at any point in the circle of time, then you reach that point of freedom. Okay. All right. So, but the Aurora Borealis does have an importance because it's what we can see of the magnetosphere. And the Earth's immune system is made up of the ionosphere and the various layers of the atmosphere, but also the magnetosphere. Just as each of us has a pranic level of bioelectromagnetism and an auric field that extends even beyond that of divine presence. And the more we are in higher levels of consciousness, the more that field of presence, which is able to attune to the various apparently different consciousnesses, we are able to receive a much larger amount of information about reality than we could if we were in a denser ego state. So in a way, it's the perception of that level of the energy that makes up the space of consciousness that's projected as if it's an external world, but is actually all part of our own internal dream field. That awareness is able to then extend into the dream field and create feedback from the dream field that reflects back the energy that was emanated in the form of love. It comes back in the form of good fortune, good karma, and of events and information that accelerates the ongoing growth and development of consciousness until it reaches the capacity to not only tolerate but to totally surrender and be absorbed into the absolute self without residue. And then we are free. Okay, I hope this was useful to you all and that you accept your right to be free and activate it as soon as your heart opens to the desire for that achievement. And God will ordain for anyone who is wanting with a purity of heart to know that love union with God, that the grace of that rapturous union will be given. So don't miss out on it. Blessings for bliss. Namaste.